Hit the record button. The talk that I'm giving today is about the healing power of ritual. And I think a lot of the talks we've heard so far in this practice have been have offered a lot of really practical and helpful advice about how we can actually cultivate our resilience through various practices as we move through this world of suffering. But when the idea for this talk popped into my head, I was a bit surprised, because what can be less practical than ritual and ceremony? participating in a ritual can seem like a very mysterious thing to do, especially the rituals we perform during service at the Zendo, when we chant in a language we don't understand, perform prostrations, which is a very un-Canadian thing to do, and do things like burn incense and transfer flower petals from one bowl to another, I don't know. And our rituals are also not performed with some god or gods to whom we speak or from whom we seek answers or solutions to our problems. It's puzzling. In fact, we're mostly taught to seek and rely on our own inherent wisdom for any answers, wisdom which just needs to be revealed through our practice. And we agree, basically, that there's no one out there who's going to answer our prayers. So I've grappled with the idea of ritual in this practice for some time now. It's just part of my karmic conditions arising, partly an old background in being a Lutheran. So it's not something, service and ritual are not something that come naturally to me. But I've had some experiences, and I've contemplated this topic a lot, studied a bit, and talked to a number of people about ritual. What I've found has led me to believe that this seemingly impractical act can, in fact, be helpful in the face of the suffering in our lives or the challenges in our lives. So as I talk to you today about these ideas, I'm holding in my heart the friends and family who are struggling with various difficulties. Whether or not they hear this talk, my intention today is to speak about something and maybe even suggest something that could provide them with some ease and comfort. So I begin with some questions. Can the enactment of ritual help us cultivate resilience? And if so, how? What is it that transforms the rote repetition of syllables and choreographed motions from a strange dance to a deep healing of the heart and to resonance within this very body? I don't have any definitive answers, but I can share my experiences, and that may point to how this occurs, and maybe reflect on your own experiences with ritual and see if you've experienced any of this. So my experience has been that the healing and fortifying power of ritual comes out of complete engagement with that ritual and then dropping off body and mind. Ritual is something that we do very much with our bodies. I mean, we do a lot of things within the Zendo with our bodies, but it's very clear that we're making sort of programmed motions and movements around the Zendo, bowing. So it's very much done with our body. Ritual is also done without an expectation of an outcome, but simply as an expression of our humanity in revealing vulnerability and realizing our connection with others. So we'll explore some of these ideas. The phrase dropping off body and mind is associated with Dogen Zenji's fascicle titled Genjo Koan. You may have heard the Japanese term Shinjin Datsuraku. Norman Fisher, in a talk about the Genjo Koan, says that dropping, or the drop, really means to be free of, or not attached to, not identified with this idea of self. My understanding is that it usually refers to the practice of Zazen, but I think it can apply to every activity. It's a practice of allowing oneself to experience the body's sensations as they are, and whatever arises in the mind as it is, without worry or identification. I think it also means really feeling how the body and mind are one, especially when they're in motion, and then forgetting all of your ideas about how they make up you. In services, I think one expression of dropping off body and mind can be in the act of bowing. It brings to mind something I recently heard about bowing, and which was one of the inspirations for this talk. In our recent Zen for Beginners course, Michael, talked about bowing as releasing his ideas about Michael, letting go of the stories, the expectations, the woulds and the shoulds. To me, it was a description of body and mind coming together to experience a moment of freedom. What a relief it can be to set all of our ideas about the self down. It's a real moment of actually dropping off, a moment of actually dropping of the body to the floor, maybe even surrendering to the unknown, while simultaneously letting go of ideas about the self. The act of chanting, even when we don't know the words, can be a similar physical experience of perceiving the body and mind as something that is not divided or separate, and then letting go of our ideas about it. We listen to the Kokyo, or the chant leader. Our voices aim towards the same pitch, or a similar pitch at least, and we all fall into similar breathing patterns as we chant the words, and we try to synchronize our recitation of those words. We hear our own voices, we hear the others around us, we hear or sense the acoustics of the space. Maybe we even begin to hear all of this together as one thing, one voice. Here are people with whom we walk a certain path. These are words chanted by people who have walked this path before us. We are part of a whole, both in the present and with the past. I'd like to talk a bit more generally about rituals now. For the purpose of this talk, I would like to identify rituals both as the services we conduct at the end of our Zazen periods, and things we might do outside of the Zendo with the intention of connecting with the larger meaning of life. Perhaps I'll distinguish these by calling them formal ritual and personal ritual. This also means that I'm putting aside my understanding for the moment that everything we do within the Zendo is a ritual, whether it is sitting Zazen, sewing rakusus, giving a Dharma talk, or listening to a Dharma talk. First, I'll talk about those things we might identify as formal rituals or parts of formal rituals. When I was Shuso in 2009, I decided to study the verse of confession during the practice period. You might remember, it's the one that goes, "All my ancient twisted karma from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, born through body, speech, and mind, I now fully avow." I had had the experience during Loon Lake, where we chant this every morning at the beginning of service, of really entering into that chant. It was a realization of how I was connected to all of my ancestors back to the beginning of time. It was a realization that my actions and reactions do not simply arise out of a vacuum, but there are layers upon layers of actions and reactions, which I had probably observed in my parents, which they had observed in their parents, and so on back to the beginning of time. And it's not simply a chain of actions and reactions within the family, but in the broader society as well. I felt a deep sense of connection with the muddy depths of history, all of my ancestors. And it was a great visceral sense of relief for me. Sure, I might have just acted if I reflect on my actions, there might be moments where I realize, oh, I've just acted out of greed, hate, and delusion. But maybe I don't bear all of the guilt for what I did. The chant provided a context and gave me the space to examine rather than deny any pain I caused. And then there was a great sense of hope. I now had this moment to break free of the chain of causation and act in a thoughtful and skillful way. Similarly, I could see that I wasn't the only person whose actions were shaped by forces that come from an ancient swamp of greed, hate, and delusion. Other people struggled too. We are all just bumbling along, often bumping into each other or stepping on each other's toes, but seeing this makes it a little easier to let go of any perceived hurt. So that's just one of my personal experiences with ritual. But I think there are many other ways that formal ritual can fortify us. Shohaku Okumura, in his book Living by Vow, talks about the verse of taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, which is also something that we chant during morning service. He says that the Buddha didn't teach us to take refuge in a deity beyond this phenomenal world. He taught us to find refuge within this world, within ourselves, so we don't have to hope in vain for an answer to our prayers. Shohaku Okumura goes on to quote from Dogen's understanding of an old Buddhist text, the Kusharan, or Abhidharmakosa Bharya. It says, if people take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, they will, in keeping with the Four Noble Truths, constantly contemplate with wisdom. They know suffering, they know the cause of suffering, they know eternally going beyond suffering, and they know the Noble Eightfold Path. Okumura concludes that in Buddhism, we have faith, not because we can't understand, but because we have the wisdom and support to look deeply. We remind ourselves to have faith in our own wisdom as we chant this, nurtured by this practice we have chosen. So these are just two chants that we recite during our morning ritual, but there are other formal rituals that can help us understand our human experience, find safety in vulnerable times, and feel connection with others. Services of well-being and memorial help bring to mind loved ones who are struggling or who have passed. These rituals create a place to safely contain and share our most difficult times, our grief, our powerlessness, our deep wishes for others. Performance of the rituals provides a public acknowledgement that, as humans, we expect these feelings. It's okay to feel the worry, the sadness, even despair, and you're supported by others. Finally, we hear the name of our loved ones chanted among a list of many names, and we realize we're not alone in experiencing these feelings and this suffering. That the suffering of those around us, sickness and death, are a part of what it means to be human, and so we're all connected by this awareness. I'd like to mention a couple of other formal rituals that support people in challenging situations. Both of these are described in the book called Zen Ritual, in an article by a Buddhist scholar named Paula Arai. She talks about the Anan Koshiki as a ceremony that was vital to Soto Zen nuns in establishing formal egalitarian status in the Soto Zen sect. The ceremony remembers and thanks the Buddha's disciple Ananda for convincing the Buddha to allow women to enter the path of renunciance. That might be something like what we do today when we ordain. The women of Aichi Senmon Nisodo, which is a nunnery in Japan, revived this ceremony in the late 19th century, performing it every year. And Paula Arai feels it led to the nuns fighting for, and by 1960, winning equal regulations in the institutional records of the Soto sect administration. The ritual itself, she points out, didn't lead directly to this fight or this dialogue with the Soto Zen sect, but it did give the women the self-confidence to see they deserved equal status. By expressing deep gratitude to Ananda, they reminded themselves that the Buddha himself eventually recognized that women could be true heirs of the renunciant path. The Jizo Nagashi is a day-long ritual performed annually on the 7th of July. And it describes the role of Jizo Bodhisattva in guiding lost loved ones through the different realms of existence. It is led only by Soto Zen nuns. After ceremonies in the temples, the 400 to 500 participants take a boat to a spot of their choosing on Lake Biwa. Each person receives a small rice paper slip with an image of Jizo Bodhisattva, which they take with them. When they arrive at their chosen spot, they release the slip into the water where it dissolves. She describes it in more detail, lifting the rice paper to the forehead and then saying the name of the person, releasing it into the water. The rice slip, or the rice paper slip, dissolves, symbolizing the lost loved one and the transformation after death. Some participants relate the experience to an expression of Buddha unencumbered by a form body as the rice paper swirls, floats, and dissolves in the beautiful interrelated expanse of the universe. These are some of the things that I have identified as formal rituals, but I'd like to take a bit of time now to talk about the practice of personal rituals. I'll have a drink of tea as a personal ritual for now. And switch my legs as my foot falls asleep. It seems to me that there are not enough formal rituals and ceremonies for all of the difficult things we experience. There are things like the loss of a friendship, a divorce, worry about children traveling far away, anger at the current political situation, especially in the United States. Many people also can't attend or participate in the formal services at the Zendo. Maybe they're too far away or don't have the time to attend. I have found both in my life and through my studies many ways that one can direct one's attention to the problems of our day-to-day lives, but in a way that places them in a larger context so that we don't feel so alone and so overwhelmed by them. Once again, it turns out that Paula Arai had some words of wisdom for me. She recounts her time learning about Japanese Zen laywomen's domestic rituals in her book called Bringing Zen Home. The women she worked with practice with a female Zen Roshi, Aoyama Shundo Roshi. They do not necessarily spend a lot of time at retreats or studying Dharma texts, But because of the strong influence of their Roshi, they consciously or unconsciously integrate the teachings into their everyday lives. Paula Arai explores how the women's domestic rituals help them deal with everything from family dysfunction and loneliness to terminal illness. She sees these women's ritualized ordinary activities, such as flower arranging, tending the home altar, doing calligraphy, cleaning the neighborhood shrine, or doing daily chores as activities of the heart, as a method of manifesting Buddha nature. While their rituals may not be described in any of Dogen's writings, the women's practice is felt to be a true expression of Buddhist teachings of non-separation or interconnectedness among all things. As an example, I'll read one of the stories recited by Paula Arai about this, about her studies of these practices. So here she speaks about one of the women's experiences. Yamamoto-san related to me her personal experience with the healing power of tea. It was a tea ceremony. She elaborates on the quality of tranquility. Silence is treasured because it embraces you and supports you in the deepest and weakest places. It is safe to be just as you are. You are accepted as you are. You are protected and cared for. Your deepest needs are understood and met. When reading about these women, I was reminded also of a friend's personal ritual that she created to deal with a deep hurt that came out of some very important friendships in her life. She wrote a narrative expressing what she understood had happened and how it affected her. She expressed her wish to heal and to not feel pain and awkwardness when she ran into these people. Then she released some flower petals into a stream as a symbol of letting go. It was a very powerful experience for her, and she felt that it had a tremendously healing effect. Talking about it afterward, I got the sense that devising a ritual engaged my friend's powers of creativity. Acts of imagination are something I believe generate deep healing because they affirm that we have the power to envision something different in our lives. But the ritual also contained that sense of mystery and not knowing. Who am I speaking to when I perform this ritual? Will it have any effect? What is there about this situation with my friends that I'll simply never understand? What is it about my own reaction and deep pain that I'll never understand? Truly experiencing not knowing, letting it go, allows what is to come forth. Enacting a ritual, any ritual, without an expectation of understanding or outcome is, I believe, a part of the healing power of the ritual. In my research, I came across an article by a Tibetan teacher, Lama Tsultram Alyon, about the traditional Buddhist practice, or its Tibetan Buddhist practice, of chode, offering one's own body to frightening demons as a way of being released from suffering. She describes the traditional practices, which involve going to charnel grounds and, you know, places that you're afraid of. But then she pivots to some really practical ways to create small rituals that can relieve the everyday suffering or our inner demons that are caused by not getting what we want. The practice that she describes begins by examining the wanting mind and becoming aware of it through our meditation practice. We can watch our mind become captured by some idea of getting something or avoiding something or even acting out to try and change things. Our meditation creates the space to observe desire or aversion, the root causes of suffering, and letting it go again and again. We learn how our mind can become fixated and how momentum around a desire or aversion can grow. Lama Alione counsels not trying to fight the craving, but rather to bring our attention back to the breath. Another way of loosening fixation is to offer the object of desire through a small ritual. An example of how food might arouse your craving state of mind is described. One way to work with this might be, she suggests, to set aside a small portion of your food before eating to slow the speed and interrupt the habitual patterns that often drive overeating. Offering this portion of food at the end of the meal by placing it outside can signal that you have finished eating and maybe prevent mindlessly continuing. It's a little bit like the practice of Orioki that we do at Loon Lake. Or if you're standing at the refrigerator door, you can bring your attention to what it is you're feeling aside from hunger and just experiencing it. You can offer compassion for that feeling of wanting with an open heart, maybe putting a comforting hand on your chest. Then you could offer whatever you are struggling with by saying something like, "May everyone have the food they need, the happiness they seek, and may they attain relief from the suffering of a dissatisfied mind." If your craving is for a material object, such as a sweater you saw while shopping, you might wish that all beings have the warmth and comfort of the cashmere sweater that you crave, and actually open your hand in a gesture of offering it to them. This can cause an actual shift in brain activity from a narrow me focus to a more connected and empathic part of the brain. Many people feel happier when released from the I want state of mind into the more open-hearted feelings arising from kindness and generosity. I thought of a few other examples of dealing with my personal demons that I thought I could try. For instance, I thought, you know, sometimes I can be frustrated by a craving to get more tasks accomplished at work. I get frustrated, like, why couldn't I do more? Why couldn't I finish 8 letters instead of 7 or something like that? My offering in that case, once I settle into the feeling of that dissatisfaction and craving, might be to say, I truly wish that all beings feel satisfied with what they've accomplished so that they can rest easy at the end of the day. No matter what, the sun will rise again tomorrow. This morning on the way here, I heard this interview with an author of a book about women and anger and its effect within the political sphere. And unfortunately, I forget her name. I just remember Rebecca. I don't remember the last name. So I thought, you know, when anger rises up in me, maybe I can rest in the awareness of how it makes my body feel and the stress this causes. And say, this anger and the anger experienced by so many others arises from a sense of injustice. May the anger not be suppressed or discounted, but may everyone be freed from the injustice that caused it. So I hope that this winding journey through all of these ideas about ritual can bring healing and resilience in a helpful way. I truly hope that either here at the Zendo or out there in the world, you can experience ritual as a safe way to express your vulnerability and suffering and to see that you're not alone. Thank you.